the Steven Universe podcast. Thanks so much for hanging out with us today. I'm your host, Mackenzie Atwood, and I'm about to be joined by all kinds of Crooniverse members so that we can talk about Amethyst. Amethyst, as most of you probably already know, is the last known gem manufactured on Earth as part of the Gem Homeworld's kindergarten project. She has awesome lilac skin, lavender hair that goes down to her ankles, and she cracks a mean whip. And you're about to find out why the whip is her weapon of choice. She's also voiced by the super talented Michaela Dietz, who will be joining us a little later along with fellow cast member Dee Dee Magno Hall, the voice of Pearl. And in case you're wondering, we're definitely going to talk to Amethyst and Pearl directly. But first, I've got Steven Universe creator Rebecca Sugar and former executive producer Ian Jones-Cordy here to give us an inside look at the creation of Amethyst. So let's jump right into it. What's the earliest concept that you guys can remember for Amethyst?
Oh, I remember that.
Which, what are you going to say? I'm curious what you think it is.
Wasn't she a character in the Lars,
Sadie comic? Yeah. Well, that's the thing. She's based off drawings I used to do of my friend Valerie.
From college.
College. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, in the Lars Sadie comic, Amethyst was... Well, she wasn't called Amethyst.
I mean, the backstory between this is, when you were in college, you had started these comics. You were going to do a strip comic.
I was going to do a strip comic, but I never did it.
No, there were some.
No, I doodled for it.
Yeah, there were like some doodles. Yeah.
I never drew a single strip, but I did plan a bunch of them.
Yeah, these are the characters for the strip. It was Lars and Sadie. And then Valerie.
I would change the name.
Yeah.
So I was interacting with my friend. But I would also draw and paint Valerie all the time. Valerie was one of my favorite friends to do drawings of.
Yeah.
And Amethyst as a character is very different than Valerie.
Yeah,
it changed a lot.
The personality is very different.
Yeah, it's completely different.
It's not really... it's just visually there was like a little bit of basis.
Yeah, yeah, the hair over the eye.
Yeah, the hair over the eye. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the really early concepts of Amethyst I remember doing in that junk sketchbook was sort of that drawing, and I remember flowers in the hair. There was going to be like a plant component early on that totally went away.
Kind of went away.
But she was always going to be like the smaller of the three.
Mm-hmm.
Was the idea that she was like defective, since you said she was always going to be shorter, was the idea that the other, I guess obviously not because she was Valerie, right?
Yeah, I think that was actually not... As planned very early on, other Amethyst would be different than Amethyst.
No.
I didn't know that at the pilot.
No, yeah, we didn't know that. I think we figured that out like first towards the middle of the first season.
Yeah, there was a big...
Like when we were writing the first season.
There was a big writer's meeting where we came up with the kindergarten.
Yeah.
And all this stuff fell into place. We always knew that Amethyst was going to represent the present because Angie had the theory of past, present, future.
Mm. And we always had the idea of Amethyst... being out of step with other gems.
Yeah, we knew she was different.
We knew she was different.
Put a pin in why.
Yeah.
And we knew she was more human.
She was more open to being an earthling than all other gems were. That was like a big thing about her.
In early thoughts about Amethyst, we always figured she was the one that would interact with people the most.
Yeah.
Like human people, throughout time.
And she does. Like she's the character who see like hanging out in Beach City randomly. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, she clearly has relationships with boardies that we've never seen that are like off screen.
Yeah.
Like she knows about Lars and Sadie. She definitely seems to be the most human focused. Whereas the other two are basically like purposefully trying not to understand humanity.
Right.
I think when we figured out that she was made on Earth, which came later in this meeting where we figured out the stuff about the kindergarten, everything clicked.
Yep.
We're like, oh, that's why she acts this way. That's why she's this way.
Yeah.
You know, this really is where she's from.
You know, something really crazy, though. So the joke in Steven's Lion... At the end of Steven's Lion, where they go, we kept Amethyst.
Oh, yeah. right.
We wrote that before.
Before we had that plan.
Before we had the plan.
Wait, really?
Yeah, we just knew.
And I think we even said that in the room. We were like, oh, we kept Amethyst. It all makes sense.
Yeah.
Because
we knew.
It all clicked into place.
Yeah,
we're showing the seams here.
There's seams. But the thing is, I think at that point, we knew that Amethyst, of all the gems, Amethyst was going to be the one who they would have found somehow. like that she was going to be the one who was like more like the wayward gem who came into the fold.
Yeah, and we knew she was like younger.
Because we
like,
knew
we all had
exactly.
that feeling.
Because we knew a lot about like we had planned out a lot about how Pearl and Garnet fit into Rose's forces during like the gem war and stuff, mm-hmm. but we knew that Amethyst was not central, you know, and so we knew that she was definitely the one who was found, you know, in a different way.
Right.
You know, and we knew like the ages of the characters too. And so that's where the joke came from.
I think
But then we explored it later, like through the actual story.
I think it felt really natural, especially with the like, past, present, future. Like Amethyst, in terms of dividing the ways that I would act around Steven into different characters, Amethyst was the one, was like the really irresponsible.
Yeah.
Like, just hanging around, not really getting to not really care what someone thinks because I'm so comfortable with this person, not being a particularly good role model because we're just like, you know, siblings who will sort of always forgive each other for being a mess like that. Like,
yeah,
that was sort of her. So I think of the ways I can be around Steven, she was the most immature.
Yeah.
Like it was the way that Steven would kind of give me permission to be immature because he was like my younger sibling. So that's why she always felt younger. It was like she was always going to, well, Pearl's like trying to act older, but it's not necessarily easy for her. And then Garnet is just like aspirational, like probably a cooler person than I'm capable of being. Like Amethyst was the one that was like, all right, we're just
equally like,
kids here.
The early ways that that manifested. Of course, there's the pilot where Amethyst purposefully gives Steven the thing he's not supposed to have and basically causes the entire conflict because she's so irresponsible. There was like I'm thinking of the earliest things we did, like Together Breakfast was one where she was just kind of being like a little mean to Steven the whole time. She's like chasing him around and stuff. That was really funny. That like informed, you know, I don't know if she got mean like that ever again, but it did inform like a lot of like, oh, she's the one who will like mess with him.
Well, that's like real. Yeah, yeah, like good natured ribbing.
Yeah. Like when you pick on your little brother just a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Amethyst is like that.
Wasn't that the episode where she like busted in and shot him with a water gun and that was like her?
Yeah.
Dumb police. Yeah.
Dumb police.
Lives on in OKKO.
Yeah.
It does?
Yeah.
Question mark?
There's characters in OKKO who are security guard brothers and they have the same exact color palette as Dumb Police, because the thing is Dumb Police, that was my drawing, and actually the like drawing of the Dumb Police, that's essentially Mr. Gar from OKKO. He looks like almost exactly the same. And then in OKKO there are these characters, they're like these guards who are like, you double are going to jail, and they just look exactly, they're the Dumb Police, that's them.
Yeah
I gotta keep an eye out. That's great.
But yeah.
So, talking about Amethyst weapon, what made you guys decide on the whip? Was that like a, I mean, those things seemed like they came along later in development, right?
No, that was really early.
Everyone's
weapons came really early.
Yeah, the weapons were like some of the earliest things that.
That's the biggest example of it. So the Apollonian Dionysian thing. You know, the spear is Apollonian, it's a big pointing object, and the whip is Dionysian, it's a big fluid shape. It's like it's completely flexible. That was some of the earliest stuff. And then Paul, I think, had a theory that they would be a knight, a cowboy, and a boxer, something to that effect, that they would all have these very different styles. Because we were working with Paul Valleca really early on, on super early doodles. I think I even have a picture of Garnet with a hammer that's like ancient.
And also, I remember there was an idea about the whip too, that as opposed to the others, like a spear and fists can really get thrown at something and hit them, but a whip is sort of like, it's like you can whip someone, but it's also, you can tie people up. There's like kind of multi-functions to it, which is like Amethyst.
It's just all about flexibility. You know? That's your thing.
It's a lot more flexible.
Flexibility and fluidity in every facet of Amethyst.
Right. So the shape-shifting thing also kind of speaks to that. Was that another intentional choice, talking about the amount of flexibility in her character?
Yes. She's completely fluid.
Like, and we
Dionysian fluid.
Yeah. And we thought that she would be using that shape-shifting to like mess with people, to like do useful things. to do very unuseful things.
She does. She's fluid.
Yeah.
She's fluid in every sense.
That she would be, like, changing into things just to make jokes.
Yeah, and yeah. I think that's something that also, it felt right in the beginning. And then I think when we started to really explore her origins, felt even more right.
Yeah. Because
it's like, she is in sort of a constant state of trying to find herself and figure herself out.
Yeah.
You know, and she leaned into that by just sort of feeling like she could be anything. I think there's, you know, there's a part of that that's really liberating, but then there's a part of that that's her actually being lost.
Yeah.
It also comes to mind thinking about, like, the fact that she's the one who's fused with all the different characters, just, like, the versatility there. And it was a big point when she was the one who could fuse with Steven for the first time for a gem. What was the decision there?
That made a lot of sense to me. Because I think Amethyst and Steven are the most like me and Steven. I'm showing my hand here. I'm more irresponsible Steven than responsible. But the two of them, I think, are the most like our actual sibling relationship, especially through that arc.
And Amethyst, as the most flexible character, would obviously be the one who it's easiest to fuse with the three main gems.
They're the closest, and they're both, I mean, that's sort of why it's Earthlings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just the most, I'd say the most alike. It's not that they're alike.
No, but they're the most similar in, like, both sort of having to deal with being a weird kind of gem that has only ever known the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they kind of have that same, you know, Garnet and Pearl have a little, there's a little more mystery there, but Amethyst is kind of like, we'll lay all the cards on the table.
Yeah.
If you really like get to know her.
Yeah. Steven kind of knows like almost everything about Amethyst that Amethyst has to, or had to offer Steven. Mm-hmm. They're very open with each other. And I think, they sort of will give and take between each other in a way that he can't do with Garnet or Pearl, who are more protective and,
yeah, and even in, like, the course of the series, Amethyst is the first gem to sort of open up to Steven.
Mm-hmm.
Like really early on, like, Tiger Millionaire, mm-hmm. she kind of just, like, you know, you get to see a lot of what's going on with her. And I think she's the one who has changed the most of like, the characters. You've seen Amethyst become several different people over the course of the series.
I think it comes back, to not just to her flexibility, but to her as the character that represents the present.
Yeah.
You know, because mm-hmm. Steven is sort of with her in the present. They're experiencing things together that are new for both of them. And it's a little different when he's interacting with Pearl, who has so much going
she's
back into the past
baggage,
that he doesn't know.
Exactly.
And then when he's interacting with Garnet, who is sort of so ahead of things and so, you know, in her own.
And it kind of makes it hard even to talk to her.
Mind.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The thing you said about Amethyst coming the furthest and talking about Steven and Amethyst's relationship makes me think about what Rose's and Amethyst's relationship was like, because I know we saw that, you know, from maximum capacity that Amethyst was in a pretty vulnerable place when Rose left.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak to any of that?
Before you get into that, I would say, like, and we see it in we see it in the flashback episodes, that before Steven existed, Amethyst was kind of the Steven of the group, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
True.
Like, she was, like,
she was new.
She was new, and she was the one who was constantly getting them in trouble. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, that was a little bit of her role back then.
Yeah. I think the fluidity that Amethyst has was something that was very encouraged by Rose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that the ways that Amethyst was different was something that Rose obviously knew, but she never wanted Amethyst to feel different.
Yeah.
I think that Amethyst was kind of in a position that Steven was in, where she was being sheltered from a lot of information that might sort of puncture this bubble, this comfortable bubble that she's in.
And that's kind of typical of Rose, in a way.
Yeah, because she wants, like, to protect people from...
She wants to protect people
from the truth.
From the truth, yeah.
And I think there's an aspect of Amethyst that's sort of a kid who was raised by hippie pair.
Yeah.
And the ways that that can be really great, but the ways that that can also be really confusing and frustrating.
She had no structure.
Yes, she had no structure. She could do anything. She could be anything.
Which is kind of like frustrating because like she was encouraged to do anything, be anything, but no one ever told her, okay, but you can also be this. Like, they never gave her the option of what she could be.
Right. Which is, and there's no, it's not like there's a right way, because
of course
I think
not.
That the alternative, there's like a reason they didn't want to tell her
but
about
like,
all these stifling gem rules. They're awful. You know, they all were living there to get away from them. So the last thing they want to do is tell this gem who, you know, is free to be anything she could possibly want to be. Like, by the way, here's like how our hierarchy works.
Yeah.
The thing that we spent forever trying to like, you know,
though, I mean, you know,
get away from.
It's like when you're a kid, you know, I don't know, like, at least I used to feel like this when I was a kid, but, like, it stinks to have rules, like, stifling rules that, like, stop you from doing what you want to do. But on the other hand, you need the rules so you can have something to, like, rebel against, you know? Like, you need to have, like, a little bit of structure so you can define yourself either with the rules or against the rules. And Pearl and Garnet had that. Because they both came from these strict societies where Garnet wasn't allowed to be herself. Pearl, you know,
isn't allowed to be independent.
Pearl wasn't allowed to be independent.
Yeah.
But Amethyst had no rules, so it's like, you can just do whatever. And
right.
So she kind of ended up in this weird kind
of... But you'd have to, like, all of their behavior was colored by these things that they knew and she didn't know. And she picked up on all of that
stuff.
And she knows that, too. Like, when she goes back to the kindergarten, she's like, this is fine, right? But she knows it's not. And she doesn't really know why.
Yeah.
She just knows it was something that everyone feels really awful about. I mean, she does... Yeah. Know why. She's gleaned it, but I feel like that's something, that's the thing that I really like to explore with Amethyst, is like a sort of strange liberal upbringing where everything is fine, except you're like, it's pretty apparent that none of this is fine.
Yeah. When people keep you in a bubble, you look outside the bubble and you realize, like, wait a minute, the world is actually a really difficult place.
For someone like me.
And Amethyst wasn't prepared to deal with a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard for her when it comes up.
Yeah.
But I think also...
It's just really confusing.
It's really confusing. But also that gave Amethyst, like, some of the most way to go with changing. Like, for instance, like, you see Amethyst sort of find herself in... Like, when she meets other amethysts, and then when she realizes where she's from, and, like, from that point after, you see a change in Amethyst's personality. Like, she's a little more... She kind of knows a little more about who she is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something that she had to, like... It's not, like, a light bulb moment that went off in her head. It's, like, you just see her personality change.
Slowly.
Yeah, and then she becomes... She can become, like... that rock for Steven, and you see their personality change in that way.
Right. I think, you know, to be able to have that foundation for her, you know, it makes her flexibility a choice instead of the only thing that she has the ability to do. You know, it's like knowing everything that was hidden from her, like, lets her have this full understanding of how she does or doesn't want to express herself sort of as a quartz.
And actually that kind of ties back into, like, Amethyst not having that foundation of societal rules. Mm-hmm. I think it was when she met Jasper, you know, when she kind of found out, like, oh, this is actually, I'm supposed to be a little more like this. That was, like, her big butting up against, like, what her societal norms actually were, you know, and that let her finally define herself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you guys so much for coming on and talking to me.
Of course.
Totally.
So now that you know more about Amethyst's origins and backstory, let's find out what it takes to bring her to life and how she's changed and grown with the show, with Michaela Dietz, who voices Amethyst, and Dee Dee Magno-Hall, who voices Pearl. I'm sitting here with Dee Dee Magno-Hall, the voice of Pearl, and Michaela Dietz, the voice of Amethyst. Thank you guys so much for coming back and talking to me again.
Hey!
Hi!
Wonderful to be back
and seeing you again.
Yeah. So today we're talking about Amethyst.
Yes.
I don't know if you know anything about that, Michaela.
I might be able to find some info on that.
Yeah. There's a little bit of context. So Amethyst is a really cool character that finally got her first like big arc, I think, like where it was all focused on Amethyst for a while in season 3. And it was the whole Jasper problem that they were facing at the time. So what was it like? You had to portray a lot of Amethyst, like, going... She sort of hit rock bottom at that point, you know, where she was like, I'm not good enough, you know. Was it like, taxing to play a character that reaches that point?
I mean, I don't know about taxing, but I could definitely tap into that emotion. She was so focused on her arch nemesis at the time. And at the same time, I think it was also so difficult for her because she felt like, in many ways, she wasn't good enough because she was directly comparing herself to Jasper. Like, in her mind, they come from the same place. They should be the same. I mean, I could personally relate to that, I guess. Maybe it might have something to do with my being adopted. Sort of like, who am I? Who am I supposed to be? Mm-hmm. Am I good enough? Am I not? I guess there's sort of an inner struggle there. But I wouldn't say, like, I came home crying every day.
Right.
It was a taxi on that level, but like, yeah, I mean, getting into that emotion, yeah, it can be challenging at times.
It's tough. It was like, I definitely am someone who's guilty of like comparing myself to people, especially like people my age. I'm like, oh, they're doing cool things, you know?
You're doing a lot of
cool
things.
I mean, when I look at you, I'm like, oh man, she's so young. She's doing cool things. Thank you. Thank you guys. But yeah, well, like even, but everyone compares themselves. I feel like that's just a thing that it's impossible to avoid trying to compare yourself. And it's never going to end well. I just, yeah, I found that really relatable. What about you, Didi? Have you ever compared yourself?
Oh, always, you know, in this business where I'm always up against somebody else trying to get that same part, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you get to a point where you just have to go in and I'm referring to auditioning for, you know, voiceover work or acting on stage or television and film. But you get to a point where you just have to go in and do your best. And, you know, if you're right for the part, you're right for the part. And, you know, you just do your best job.
Mm-hmm.
I think also with Amethyst, she's so little, but she packs a big punch.
She does.
Thanks, Mom.
She holds her own.
Thanks, Mom. When I was little, actually, my mom would be like, Michaela, great things come in small packages.
Yeah.
I was like, puny. And she'd be like, don't worry about it, girl. You got it.
But I also deal with that with my kids, too, because, you know, my 12-year-old is now, you know, he's in middle school, so he's constantly comparing himself to his friends. That guy's got that video game. How come I don't have that video game?
I'm like, you have plenty. He's like, you have love, and you have me.
You have me.
Is that not enough?
Like, with auditioning, Didi, sometimes when you look at a role and you're like, oh, how do I fit in this box of that? Like, the description will be like, nerdy Asian girl or whatever. And you're like, I always think like, how do I fit in that box? And I think maybe a better mindset would be, how do I break that box? How am I different? Like, I don't want to be the same as everyone. How do I stand out? And I think at the end of Amethyst's arc, I think she realized she doesn't need to fit in a box. She can break out of that box.
Yeah, it was really cool. I think that a lot of that came from with Steven, you know?
Yeah.
Their conversations that they had together. It was like, and then that ended in Smoky Quartz, obviously. What was your
best?
You guys remember when you saw Smoky Quartz for the first time or like learned
yes.
that? Smoky was a thing.
So cool.
Yeah.
My reaction, IRL, was the same reaction that Amethyst had when Garnet asked her to form Siglite.
Yeah.
It was like, freaking out. I was like, no way. I had no idea it was coming when I read the script.
Yeah.
Didi looks stunned right now.
No. I'm remembering all the voices, the voice actors that played.
Oh, Natasha Lyonne.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's so good.
She is so cool.
Smokey's really great. I love their design, too.
Totally.
And the yo-yos.
Okay,
and the
wait.
Three arms.
Yeah.
Wait, so Rebecca told me that she consulted with a top yo-yo competitor, a yo-yo athlete, for certain moves. And so all the moves are real. Because, like, I think maybe even when Natasha Lyonne is like, yeah, see, sink the dink, and, like, she, like, hits Jasper, like, I think that's a real move. I don't know if it's called Sink the Dink.
Right.
But I think it's a real move.
It's real. That's incredible.
Is that amazing?
Why aren't people fighting with yo-yos in real life? That's my question.
I mean, well,
maybe
I think
now they are.
They are fighting, but not inducing physical harm. Like, there are yo-yo competitions. There's one I think an hour from here.
Incredible.
Yeah, and I would like to go, and I'm inviting everyone in this room. Maybe we should all go next year together.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah,
I love it.
They do it to music. It's insane.
That sounds incredible. We should get Smokey on that, too.
Okay, I would love that.
By the way, I have, dabbled with the yo-yo.
Oh, the yo-yo.
And gosh, if it was a weapon, it would hurt. Because I have found that to be true.
Yeah?
When you're trying to walk the dog.
IRL.
I've never said that before.
Congratulations, Dee Dee.
Thank you.
Way to a breathe. So good.
So, you're talking about the arc and everything. What kind of lessons do you think that one... well, we talked about that. We'd like the not comparing yourself to others and stuff like that. But do you feel like it, like, is universally applicable? We talked about how it applies to a younger audience, but, like, can it relate to, like, adults and stuff and older fans as well?
Of course.
Absolutely. I love what you said about not fitting into the box, but rather breaking out of that box, thinking outside of the box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just... I mean, I don't know whether it's the media or societal pressures, but it seems like a very human response to try to conform. And I think what the show does, what Steven Universe does through Rebecca's characters and all the storylines, it helps people realize, like, you don't necessarily have to conform. Like, you are enough. You, as an individual, like, let that shine.
Right.
Sorry, I was like, how... do I make sentences?
No, you're totally making sense.
Yeah.
But it's so funny because I feel like the young people today are not conforming. I think that they're embracing their individuality. And I think it's a beautiful thing to just accept who you are. I think more people nowadays than I was when I was growing up anyway that I noticed that kids are really... expressing themselves more and just being themselves and being comfortable in their skin, which I think is awesome. And I also believe that this show is helping people to do that, to celebrate who they are.
Totally. Helping the youths. Yes.
The youths.
And the oldies as well.
The youths and oldies.
Mackenzie, I think there is, though, another very relatable lesson to be learned in the Smoky Quartz fusion. Mm-hmm. And I think that when Steven and Amethyst fused, it was in a moment where they both really felt not good enough. They both were at their lowest, and through that they bonded. And I think that's sort of a lesson in asking for help, depending on others. Keep your friends close and don't be afraid to reach out to ask someone if they need help and obviously, receive that help if you yourself need it. So for adults and children and dogs and cats and whatever other creatures you want to talk about, like that is, I think, a really important lesson.
We all share one earth.
That's lovely. Except for Yellow Diamond because she's on homeworld.
Truth. Don't let her come here. That would be a crisis. You mentioned the thing about conforming, and it reminded me about Amethyst's whole shape-shifting thing.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's something really interesting about her character, how she sort of... It's like, I always thought of it as, like, her having a really fluid, like, self-image that she can adapt to. Like, she's like, the one who's fused with all the other crystal gems, and I don't think anybody else... Nobody else has done that. Like, and... I think that that's just because she's so adaptable.
Totally.
Yeah, and I think that that it's sort of different from the way Pearl is, just more rigid. We never see Pearl shapeshift, you know? What do you guys think about that?
What do we think about...
Just the idea that the self-image plays into the way that you...
Oh, yeah.
...are able to... Amethyst is all shapeshifty and stuff.
Right. And Pearl is more reserved.
Yeah, yes.
Hey, keep that in your back pocket until you really need it.
Yes, exactly. It's the backup. It's the trump card. Yeah.
I mean, I definitely think that speaks to how You know, Pearl has a very clear idea of herself, and she, for the most part, is not going to compromise that. Whereas Amethyst is someone who can just, like, she's pretty malleable. She's going to try to, yeah,
go free spirits.
Totally. Yeah, you know. Whether it's the dumb police or an owl or a baby in a car, like which way did the baby work? Yeah, or a helicopter. Or Pearl.
Yeah. Which has been your favorite, you think?
Of shapeshifting?
Yeah.
I mean, oh, there are so many. I would say the baby.
Baby war.
That little baby with the tooth and the hair and the Jeep. Eat tread. Yeah, like, funny to me. I don't know.
I think about that a lot.
Oh, wait, time out. What am I saying? Purple Puma.
Okay, yeah, that's another great favorite. One.
Purple Puma.
I love when she used that against Lapis in that one battle, because you'd seen her do it in the past, like turn into the Purple Puma character, but like that was the time when she actually used it to just like pound someone to the ground, and it was like, yeah, go get it. Like,
yeah.
I love that.
Didi, what's your favorite shapeshift? Like, if Pearl could shapeshift, what do you think she would shapeshift into?
Oh, that's my a new goodness. Question. That is it. That's a really good question. I'm going to have to... I have to think about it.
Okay.
Gosh.
Maybe, like, a list on the fridge.
It would be a bird, right? It would be a bird. Ooh, like
a bird mom,
yeah,
perhaps?
It would have to
a bird
be.
Laying eggs.
It would have to be some sort of bird. I mean, like, I don't know what kind of... I don't think it would be a chicken. It would be something that's more like
a perlicky
bird, a dove, perhaps.
Yes.
Ooh.
A swan.
Those are all good options. Yes.
Yeah.
I think it more of like a flamingo.
Ooh.
Oh, it's just like has really gangly legs, and it's like ah, you know.
Nice.
That's the image I'm getting more than the swan.
Hey, you should do ADR for flamingos.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was amazing.
Thank you. I've been working on my flamingo noise.
Yeah.
I practice every night. So another thing that happened in this latest string of episodes, right,
yeah.
is the well, first of all, these episodes have been sad. But
right?
Right? Yeah.
We got to watch a bunch of them back to back, and we all were like,
yeah, like, my
tissue,
heart
please?
Hurts. Yeah, like, but one of the ones that Amethyst is in Back to the Kindergarten.
Ooh, I love that one.
Yeah, and she really helps out Peridot in that episode. I thought it was really cool to see her, the tough love side of Amethyst.
Yeah.
Who really just, like you said, it was helping people out, you know, helping someone else who's hit rock bottom, and just sort of pulling her out of the bathroom where she's laying on the floor and listening to sad music and taking her to the kindergarten, if that's what it takes.
Yeah.
What do you think that, like, says about Amethyst?
Well... Okay, wait. Sorry. Side note. Shelby's voice acting in that episode is amazing.
Yes.
Even her, like her moans in the beginning are... It's
up.
Like, whoa, I've heard that moan IRL.
Yes.
IRL.
But, yeah, so amazing. I think what that says about Amethyst is, to me, that episode actually was a huge mark for her. In terms of her development, it showed me how far she's come, truly, emotionally. You know, I think in the past she wouldn't have been able to deal with helping out Peridot or even suggesting going back to the kindergarten, a place which maybe in the past brought her so much pain. Like, she had a whole new sort of perspective after, you know, meeting a bunch of the Amethysts. And I think it just really showed that she's matured a great deal.
I hadn't even thought about the Famethyst thing, but that, yeah, that's really important to the way that she
yeah.
approached the thing.
Yeah, I think she always saw the kindergarten as like, yeah, just sort of a reminder of how she wasn't good enough, and she stayed in the ground for too long, and now it's like, oh, wow, I can associate this with all these new people who I met who are kind of like my family, and... This is actually a place that I'm pretty proud of.
And, right.
And yeah, I mean, it seemed like she and Steven went through really great lengths to try to cheer up Peridot. And even when Peridot lashed out, I felt like Amethyst, for the most part, kept her cool. And
right.
I think that's a whole new side of the character that, you know, I've ever seen.
It shows a lot of, yeah, it shows a lot of maturity and
yeah.
the ability to, like, see
and okay, restraint.
I know. Yeah, exactly. Rather than just like, shut up.
You know?
It reminded me of On the Run, which is, we've talked about that episode before.
Yeah.
You talked about how it served as sort of a reminder of, you know, how she's imperfect or, you know, a mistake or whatever.
Right.
And for a while, it seemed like that caused a lot of tension between her and Pearl as well. I think that probably was a root of a lot of problems they had in early season one when they would just bicker all the time.
Yeah.
What do you think it was like helped her get over that as well? Like the Famithist thing? Or was that just a...
Well, I think that... Yes, the kindergarten was a cause of tension between Amethyst and Pearl, but I think it also, you know, there's a flip side of that, and I think it was a place where they actually physically bonded.
They
I mean,
did.
That
right.
moment
nice
when they
connection.
Were, like, hugging, and I mean, that was a whole new start in their relationship, and so...
Maybe that also led to your being so adult-like with mm-hmm, Peridot. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Mom.
Bringing her back there and being a good friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The shorty squad.
I wish Pearl had been in that ep. I think she would have been very proud of Steven and Amethyst.
So,
don't you think?
Yeah.
That
yeah.
would have been cute.
And maybe helped us plant some cool things.
I think that she would have.
That would have inevitably died.
Yeah. Okay, my last question I have for you is would you love to see a shorty squad fusion, the Peridot and the Steven, both of you?
Oh my gosh, that would be so fun.
Yeah?
Yes.
I totally agree.
That would be so fun.
Yes, and so earlier Mackenzie told me that Zach has a theory that if Steven and Peridot fused, the fusion would just get smaller. Because they're so
tiny.
Little. And if you add Amethyst into that equation, it would be, like, smaller and just way louder.
Yes.
So I think the world needs that, yeah.
That would be their power. Yeah. They could, like, infiltrate.
Yeah.
Crawling through pipes and stuff.
Oh.
Hey.
Yeah. We just came up with an OC. We came up with a new character, guys.
That is so cool.
Okay, guys, thank you so much again for coming on and talking to me.
Well, yeah. Thanks, Mackenzie.
Thanks for having us.
All right, Amethyst and Pearl are together and talking to us coming up.
All right, I am sitting here with Amethyst and Pearl.
What's up?
Yeah, hey guys, how are you doing?
Hello.
I've got some questions for you, Amethyst and Pearl. Feel free to chime in if you have anything to add.
Oh, okay.
So first question I have is from Cree, who wants to know, what's your favorite thing to shapeshift into?
Okay. Hey, Cray. My favorite thing to shapeshift into is probably Pearl. Womp womp. Amethyst.
Really? Never fails. Never gets old.
You're welcome, Cray.
Next question is from Nancy.
Ooh.
Who wants to know, how did meeting the other Amethyst change your outlook and your, like, idea of yourself?
Oh, man. I mean, meeting the Amethyst was amazing, and it changed my sense of self in that now I have other people who look like myself. It's crazy. Like, now I have, like, the Famithyst, and they're so funny. They're, like, pranksters just like me. We like to mess with Steven. It's great.
It's nice to have friends.
The squad.
Yeah.
Good. A question from Isa. Who wants to know, have you ever posed as somebody's cat? I'm thinking, like, long term, like, I guess sneaking into their house.
Oh, and
or
like,
something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You've done, you have?
Did you say for a week? Because I did it for 2 weeks.
Oh.
Yeah.
So did they find out?
Yeah. So it's like my neighbor, Eleanor. Oh, wait. That's not this. Sorry. I was just thinking about.
I hope you didn't get in trouble with the authorities.
You would like, know
you
about
should
that,
talk,
you,
Pearl.
Pearl. Yeah.
I know a little something about that.
Okay, so for 2 weeks, I snuck into this lady's house, and I, like, pretended to be one of her 18 cats, and I just, like, barked at her. So that kind of gave me up a little when I
right.
barked at her, because I guess cats don't bark.
Lesson learned.
Yep.
Learn that for next time.
Note taken.
Have you ever... Oh, somebody... Gemma?
Oh, Gemma. What
Gemma.
Up, Gemma?
Yes. Wants to know, have you ever tried shape-shifting into a chicken and then laying an egg? Is that, like, physically possible?
Yeah, it's been done. I've done it, and it was excellent.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that would be a good source of, like, financial income. Like,
it was really special. I crack
always with
up.
The jokes.
Oh, so many yolks. Enough. Oh,
that's a good one, actually.
Actually.
Okay, I have another egg-related question from
okay.
Emmy, who wants to know, how do you like your eggs? Country scrambled, over easy, or the shells, carton, and everything on top?
How do I like my eggs? Whole. There's nothing worse than just, like, half of an egg. That's weird.
Right.
Okay, also, what's country scrambled? Is it, like, dandelions in it?
Probably.
Or, like, a map, and there's just, like, you know, like, Australia, like, cut up and, like, put in your egg? I don't really get this question.
No, it's where you fry them on the hood of a tractor.
Oh.
I think it's the
is that what it is?
It's a special flavor.
Man, humans are so fascinating.
It's crazy, right?
Okay, cool. I mean, who am I kidding? I just like the shells, carton, everything on top, preferably dipped in some motor oil.
Mm-hmm. The whole package.
Yeah, so maybe that's kind of country.
Yeah, that's pretty, if it's like, yeah.
Okay.
Like, I think that works. I think it counts.
Okay, cool.
A question from Steve, who wants to know, is there any food that you don't like?
From Steve?
Yeah.
Hi, Steve. Like Steven?
Oh, no. Oh. Different Steve.
Oh, I got excited.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a question he could just ask you.
Oh, yeah. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, is there any food I don't like? Yes.
Mm.
I cannot stand overcooked remote controls.
No?
Disgusting.
Yeah? What's your ideal cook time, you think?
For, like, the perfect remote control, I would say, you know, one and a half minutes on 350 max.
Right. For the golden brown.
Yes.
I understand.
Yeah.
I totally agree. There's not enough people in this world who appreciate a tasty remote control.
Yeah, it's true. Best food ever. My favorite.
If we have to purchase another remote control, Amethyst... It's coming out of your allowance.
Oh, wow, I get allowance now?
Okay, guys, thank you so much for talking to me.
Boy, thanks, Bird Mom.
The Steven Universe podcast is produced by Charles Abadje, Stacey Parra, and Conrad Montgomery. Special thanks to Rob Sorcher, Cartoon Network Studios, and the Krooniverse. So subscribe to the Steven Universe podcast now at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And please leave us a 5-star rating and review while you're there. I'm Mackenzie Atwood, and I will see you next Thursday.